pregnant to make up for the credits I fell behind on. I had to fight not to be put in a special program for young mothers so I could take senior-level classes and graduate on time with you all. I've worked since I was 13 and done double that since having a child. She shrugs again. I'm not saying it makes sense. It was just hard to like you. I don't really have anyone at home supporting me or pushing me. But even though everyone pitied you at first, you just walked through the halls like you were Queen Bee, like you couldn't even see us. I smile. Well, yeah, how else are you supposed to act when people pity you? She smiles back. Yeah, I guess I hope that if I'd been you, I would have acted the same way. Listen, I was wrong. Malachi ain't the only guy at Schomburg. I'll fall back. We've shared a lot today, Pretty Leslie and I, and it's the first time I feel like she's being honest with me. Ready? Where's your host family? I ask as I wander through the house. Malachi's host parents are college professors at the local university and are some of the few host parents who speak perfect English. They had an event at the school, a reading or something. I nod and stop in front of one of the paintings in the hall. It's a pretty scene of the city, the light on the stones, the awnings of the marketplace and the plaza. Malachi tugs on one of my curls before reaching his hands up my neck to my scalp. It feels good to have him play with my hair. What are you thinking about? Nothing. This is a nice painting. Are you nervous to be here with me? I can stop. We can go out or something. It seems a shame not to enjoy one of our last nights in the city, and a Friday at that, but it also seems a shame to waste a perfectly empty apartment. Decisions, decisions. Let's just hang out on the couch for a bit before going out. Maybe we can watch TV? A Harry Potter marathon is on, and I sit with Malachi's arm around me. I translate some of the lines, but Malachi has seen the movie before, so he can work out a lot of the dialogue without me. We get up to the part when Harry emits his Patronus against the Dementor for the first time, when Malachi starts playing with my fingers. Then his hand is on my thigh. I sit still. I want to lean against him. You are nervous. I touch a dimple. Are you a virgin, Malachi? I've never had the balls to ask, but this seems like something I should know. He clears his throat and stops playing with my hand. There was a girl at my last school. We weren't that serious, but we'd fooled around. We'd talked about doing more, but then my brother was shot, and I was a mess, and my mother told me she was sending me here, and then I met you. I turn my face, and he gives me a soft tap kiss and leans back. When I don't move, he gives me another tap kiss, and it lasts a little longer. The next time he kisses me, I'm on him. Legs straddling his lap, arms wound around his back, kissing him back. Tyrone had been fast and all about him. And it'd been fun the couple of times we did it. Maybe not even fun, as much as it was exciting. It was something new. It was like entering a world everyone talked about, but no one knew how to explain. And all of a sudden, you're allowed into the secret. Even if it's not much of a secret. And if I had to count, I'd say we had sex 3 times at the most. The first time, probably when I got pregnant, and twice after that. I never saw what the big deal was about, outside of how nice it was to be touched. But this is different. Are you sure you're a virgin? I ask him. He kisses like he's been kissing for a long time, and his hands move slowly, like they have a precise goal in mind. Are you sure you've done this before? He responds. I laugh and smack his shoulder. But I am nervous. Not because I know tricks or anything. Tyrone and I didn't even do it enough times for me to learn much. But my naked body shows it once carried a child. I dropped the weight quick enough, but it's the other things that show when you aren't wearing clothes that mark you as someone who's given birth. With Tyrone, it hadn't even mattered what I knew or didn't know because he knew I didn't know anything. But I feel like Malachi expects things. Malachi, I'm not really that experienced. It was only a couple of times. Don't get your hopes. He puts a finger up to my lips and keeps kissing my neck. Please don't bring up other times right now. We can talk later, if you want. But this isn't about other people. We're not here with other people. We're here. Right now. Me and you. Right? He keeps kissing my neck, and then my hands are everywhere. I need to touch his skin, his shoulders, his back. I kiss his ear, and he moans into my neck. That feels too good. And this was new too, this power of making a boy jump or moan. I take my shirt off and he takes off his. Are you sure? He asks. I press a hand to his heart. I'm not sure of anything. Kiss me again? So we do. We kiss and we rub and his hands are on my body and I haven't shown this body to anybody in a long, long time. He rubs a hand along the stretch marks on my breasts and stomach, all the things that mark me as a mom in the most obvious of ways. He kisses me there and everywhere. He reaches for my jeans. I cover Malachi's hand where it's undoing my zipper and hold it still. I think we should wait. It would be romantic, in Spain, your first time, all of that. It'd be like a story. But Malachi puts his hands up and throws his head back on the couch. I start scooting off his lap, but he holds me in place. All good, Santi. He hugs me to himself. Give me a second to get myself under control. I brush my fingers on his chest. Maybe? I pause and make myself be brave enough to ask for what I want and not to be rushed into what I'm not ready for. I clear my throat. Maybe we can try other things? He raises an eyebrow, and with more excitement than I've ever seen from him, he gives me a vigorous, yes, ma'am, yes, Miss Santiago, I am your teacher's pet, blank book, best student. I laugh at his straight-up silliness, and this feels right. Whatever we are to become, I'm glad that we can laugh through the uncomfortable moments. Last day. Even though it's our last full day in Spain, and a Saturday, Chef Aiden still has us report to our apprenticeships. I'm working on a marinade for the pork shoulder that Chef Amadi will be serving for dinner tomorrow night. The recipe calls for it to sit in the marinade for a full 24 hours, and a part of me wishes I was going to be here one more day so I could try it. But maybe that's the point of a trip like this. You start the process of learning, and then you carry it with you back home. I massage the spice mixture into the pork, pressing firmly. Make sure you get a dry rub on the meat too. And did you add lemon to that mix? I use sour oranges instead, I say. That's good, the sour oranges. Make sure to score the shoulder. Small, shallow cuts to capture all that flavor. I think you've learned here, no? I nod and pick up the knife. And I have learned a lot. Yes, and not just from being in this kitchen. I have learned to cook with confidence, but also to remember the guests have expectations of what I'll serve them. I've learned to trust my hands. But I've learned about more than just food. I've learned about people, from seeing how people from somewhere else walk and laugh and love and eat. You have good instincts. You will make a fine chef one day. Maybe when you finish school, you'd like to come back to Spain? I would love to take you on as my apprentice. I look up quickly and forget what I'm doing. My hand slips and I cut it where I've been holding the pork in place. I drop the knife and quickly back away. Shit. I check to see if I got any blood on the meat, but Chef Amadi puts her hands on my shoulders and pushes me toward the sink, where she runs water over my hand. Oh, here. Chef Amadi wraps a clean towel around my hand. Keep that water running. Let me see if any got on the food or cutting board. We have band-aids and gloves in that cabinet above your head. Only a couple more hours, and you would have gone through the trip unscathed, but now you have a war scar to prove you were here. The small cut stings, but nothing like the tears in my eyes. Being able to stay here, to work in a real kitchen after school, and learn more would be a dream. But even as I think it, I know I would never want to leave my daughter, or my abuela, or the city I love. Imani, it was so wonderful working with you. Anytime you are in Spain, you come back here. And if you ever want to talk about working here, I have use for a chef with hands like yours. Oh, and here, Chef Amadi hands me a letter. This is my official academic evaluation of your work for Chef Aiden. Don't read it, unless you want to. She smiles at me and hands me a container of tea. And these are tea bags I put together from my own garden. You can make tea or add it to a recipe. I'm sure you'll figure out how to use it. I hold the bag up to my nose. Lavender, ginger, chamomile. There's something in here I can't place, I say to her. Ah, and that's why it is magic. Not all recipes in life are easily understood or followed or deconstructed. Sometimes you have to take what is given to you and use your talents to brew the best tea possible. Yes? She wraps me in her arms before I can answer, and then she's shooing me out the door. I take off my smock and chef's hat and fold them neatly, handing them over. The pork shoulder will be wonderful. I can't wait to try your marinade. Be good and safe. And oh, Imani, trust. Okay? Trust. Yourself mainly, but the world too. There's magic working in your favor. She closes the door before I can say anything else. And for a second I feel naked, like I'm unhidden in the light of the evening sun, a person different from who I was a moment ago. Duende. Pretty Leslie and I spend our last night with Mariana. She's made a big traditional meal for us and even poured us a glass of sangria. I swear to God, Pretty Leslie turned Hulk smash green at the smell of the wine, and I couldn't stop the laugh that broke through my lips. She doesn't touch her glass at all. For once, I try not to analyze the dish in front of me and just eat to enjoy. Mariana has an old-school boombox in her dining room and Spanish songs play on a loop. I recognize some from when Buela has her radio on in the kitchen, and others I don't know but wish I did. One song comes on, and the first couple of words make me lower my fork. Mariana must notice, because she gets up and turns the volume higher. Even Pretty Leslie must realize this is a beautiful song, because she closes her eyes and listens. The singer has a deep voice, and the end of each note is punctuated with a clap. Do you recognize? Mariana asks me. I shake my head. This is not a voice I know. Mercedes Sosa, folk singer from Argentina, but well-loved here. I close my eyes. I don't want to miss another word. She sings about how everything changes, the shallow and the profound, the shiny and the old, everything but the love for home changes. I'm tapping my foot to the rhythm, and when the song ends, Mariana gets up and plays the song again. Mercedes Sosa was full of duende, of inspiration and passion. I savor this new word as if it were the last bite on my plate, and I know now I'm ready to go back home. Home. I grab my suitcase from the conveyor belt and give Malachi a quick kiss. He pulls me back for a longer one, and I blush down to my toes as my classmates whoop and holler at seeing so much PDA. I'm almost out of the terminal when I glance behind me because I hear someone cursing up a storm. It's Pretty Leslie and her three big bags, huffing and puffing behind me towards the SEPTA sign. Leslie, do you need a ride? My grandmother's friend is here to pick me up. You stay over on Lehigh, right? Pretty Leslie doesn't need to say a word for me to see the relief written all over her face. That would be great, Imani. Thanks. Mr. Jagoda is waiting right out front when we exit the terminal, and he seems so happy to see me. And I can't lie, it's nice to see a familiar face who's going to take me to my family. In the Volkswagen, we sit in silence, listening to an oldie station. And although I fight not to run out the car every time we stop for traffic, tolls, or a red light, Mr. Jagoda's easy humming and calming demeanor helps me push back my impatience. I just want to see my baby. I couldn't even sleep on the flight or joke with Malachi because all I can think about is baby girl. We drop Pretty Leslie off, and exactly 4 minutes later, Mr. Jagoda pulls up out front of my house. "Will you be coming inside?" I ask Mr. Jagoda as he helps lift my bag from the trunk. He smiles, and I love the way his eyes crinkle at the corners and his big bright teeth peek past his lips.
"Oh no, I've already seen Gloria this week, and I think today she has eyes only for you."
He pats my cheek and hops back into the driver's seat. I run toward the front stairs. When I open the door, Buela bursts into tears from the center of the living room where she's holding baby girl. Baby girl squeals and reaches for me from Buela's arms, and I don't even worry about the open door. I just run in and grab her to me, inhaling her baby smell, a smell I know better than my own name. I blink up at the ceiling. I move to Buela. I don't want to let go of baby girl, so I just turn and hug Buela with my loose arm. She smells different, like expensive perfume. But her hands, when she holds my face and kisses both cheeks, still smell like vanilla.
"Pero tú si me hiciste falta, nena."
I press my cheek into her palm and nuzzle close, my eyes drifting shut. "I missed you more, Buela." Acceptance. Later that night, I'm on my bed reading a magazine with baby girl tucked into my side. Lunch with Buela and baby girl was so sweet, and I know all of us ate too much of Buela's mofongo. I only wish the jet lag hadn't hit me so hard. It wasn't until my plate of food slid off my lap that I even realized I'd been asleep. I definitely needed a little nap. Baby girl looks twice as big as when I left her, even though I know it's not possible. "I talked with Angelica this week, and she told me a lot of admission decisions went out last week. Were you able to check email in Spain?" Buela doesn't walk all the way into the room. She plays with the fringes of the long gray scarf I bought her, and I notice she isn't wearing her wedding band. I want to snuggle into her familiar Spanish accent, her soft wavy hair, how firm she stands in her uniform of dress slacks and pale pullover. I don't want to tell her I was too afraid to check any of the school decisions.
"How many schools did you apply to again?"
4 four-year colleges and a community college," I mumble. She stands by the door, waiting. I grab my phone and log into the first school, a rejection from Temple University. I log into the second school, a rejection from LaSalle. I sign into my third school, a rejection from Arcadia. Oh, shit. If I don't get in anywhere, I don't know how I'm going to tell Buela. There's a difference between not wanting to go to school and not even getting in.
"Buela, I think we should wait until tomorrow. I don't want to ruin the rest of your night."
"Come on, nena. Just finish it. Whatever it'll be, I'd rather be with you than you find out the news alone. Faith, Imani."
I sign into the Drexel portal, and I slow down at what I'm seeing. Buela must realize my silence this time is different, because her hand stops playing with her scarf.
"Qué fue, nena?"
I pull baby girl into my lap, and she cuddles into me without waking up. I drop a kiss on the top of her head. I hold my phone out to Buela. I want her to read it herself. She closes her eyes as if saying a prayer. She scans the electronic letter, and when she looks at me,
A big tear rolls down her cheek. She fans her face with the scarf as if it will stop the onslaught of tears. But then she's hugging me and laughing, and even when baby girl wakes up crying, all Abuela can do is hold me on the bed and rock me, saying over and over, mi niña is going to college. Call your father. He's going to be so proud. Surprises. I didn't think I would be accepted into Drexel. My grade point average was a little below what they say a student needs, so I'm still shocked. Unlike the guidance counselor in middle school, Miss Fuentes pushed me to apply, even though it was a reach school. It's close to home, it's a great school, and it has a culinary arts program that focuses not only on cooking, but also on restaurant management. But I don't know how I'll help pay bills if I'm also paying for school. Abuela, I need to talk to you, I say to her the next day after dinner. She mutes the TV and beams at me. Ever since my Drexel acceptance, all she can do is smile at me or tear up. I don't want you to get your hopes up about Drexel. I didn't get full financial aid. And well, doesn't it make more sense for me to get a job instead of going into debt? Abuela doesn't stop smiling. She blinks as if she's waiting for the punchline of the joke, but when I just repeat myself, she shakes her head. What do you mean, Imani? This is a dream come true. I shake my head. I want to be in a kitchen, not in a classroom. You know I'm no good at school. What if I waste time and money and still fail my classes? Imani, you've loved your culinary arts class this year. I know you told me this would have more chemistry and you're afraid of not doing well, but once you have a degree, no one can take that away from you. You'll just have to work hard. I wish I could explain that I do work hard, even in the classes I don't do well in. It's not my effort that makes learning in those classes so difficult for me. But I also know I'm not 13 anymore. Last time I let a guidance counselor convince me I wasn't good enough to go to the school of my choice. This time around, will I be the one holding myself back? Imani, I've been waiting a long time for you to be able to go out into the world and fly. Do you want to know where I go when I'm pretending to be at the doctor's? I asked the one time and never asked again. Abuela made it very clear it was none of my business. I don't know if I should nod or shake my head, so I just stand still. Oh, God. Oh, God. What if Abuela is sick? What if she just wanted me all settled because she knew something was wrong? The wall behind me is the only reason I'm standing. I brace myself for her words. I go to the doctor so much because sometimes I need to get away from all of... She swirls her hand in the air and all of must mean everything in the house. I go to the doctor to remind myself I am more than a great-grandmother to a toddler, and a grandmother to a teen mother, and a mother to a rascal of a son. She clears her throat. Okay, the real reason I go to the doctor so much is because of Joseph, Mr. Jagoda. She doesn't look at me when she says all this, and I see a blush is climbing up her brown cheek. My grandmother is blushing like a girl with her first crush. And he's been courting me. You know, he's the office manager at his son's doctor's office, and he's nice to me, and he took me to dinner at that fancy restaurant, and we get coffee on the weekends, and have been to a movie. He has his accent from Poland, and I have my Puerto Rican accent. We talk all the time, and mostly, we just sit silently. And that's probably the nicest part. I haven't sat quietly next to a man in a long time. I haven't had someone who wasn't depending on me to sew up the tears, a companion, in a long time. And Nena, it's... She pats her chest. And I know just what she means. He isn't perfect. I mean, he's a Giants fan, for God's sake, but he makes me feel like a woman. Not only a mother, so many times removed. I don't know what to say to her. Her face has taken on a different look. Not so tight and pinched around the mouth. The wrinkles on her forehead have smoothed out, and she drops the hand she was just swirling into the air right back onto her heart. I sit on the couch next to her and then push my arms around her. Oh, Boyla. Thank goodness. I'm so glad you aren't sick or, I don't know, sitting on a park bench by yourself just to get away from us. And Mr. Jagoda, you're right. He's been so nice. I'm so glad you have someone. I squeeze her tight. Her voice is thick when she breaks the silence. He asked me to move in with him. He wants to marry me. And of course, I would never leave you and baby girl. I couldn't. It wouldn't be right. Pero, Imani, sometimes it feels nice to dream. I don't lift my hand to wipe my cheeks. But, Buela, if this is what you want, don't you have to set a good example for me? She hiccups a laugh and pulls back from me. I've taught you a lot, Imani Santiago, and what I have been most proud of is what you learned about sacrifice and responsibilities. I can't shirk mine either. Buela, I don't want you putting your life on hold for me. I remove my arms fully from around her. That's my baby in there. You've done enough. Marry your Joe. We're going to be just fine. Just fine. I don't know if we're going to be fine at all. But I try to remind myself of Mercedes Sosa's song, Everything Changes. I'll learn to be fine. Before I go to bed, I call Julio. I didn't phone him once while I was in Spain, and he didn't call me either. I wish he was a texter since that would be easier, but he has conspiracy theories about the government reading people's texts. Imani, remember your viejo finally. I hope he doesn't hear my sigh. Hey, Julio, how are you? I hear some rustling in the background, and I know I must have interrupted his reading. Me? I'm always the same. How was Spain? Mommy tells me you were living the good life out there in Europe. I tell him a little bit about the trip and the apprenticeship, leaving out the Columbus Monument and all the golden structures. It's too late to listen to a Julio rant. Julio? I just wanted to let you know I got into college, into Drexel here in the city. Buela is so excited, she's probably going to start putting up posters, and I wanted you to find out from me before one of your block homies called. On the other end of the line, there's silence, and for a second, I think the call dropped. Julio? I hear what sounds like a sniffle, but that can't be true. My father didn't cry when he lost his home in the last big hurricane. Didn't cry when I stopped calling him Papi and started calling him by his first name. Doesn't cry when he visits my mother's tombstone. But that's definitely a sniffle. I hope Mommy does put up posters. You deserve it. You must be so happy. But he must hear the hesitation in my voice because he questions. Imani, is this not what you want? And the thing is, Julio is a lot of things. And I don't always know if I can count on him. But I do know that he believes in self-education. And if I told him I didn't want to go to school, that I thought going straight to work was a better idea, he would support me, even if he had to argue with Buela to do it. But then I think about his sniffles. I'm happy. I'm just nervous at all the new changes. And Mommy with her new boyfriend. I'm stunned. Buela told him about Mr. Jagoda? She told me. And I realize I asked that question out loud. You'll figure it out, Imani. You've had some of the most difficult challenges thrown your way, and you've always figured it out. You got angels on your shoulder. And I can only hope he's right. Next steps.
Ms. Santiago, how was your trip?
Ms. Fuentes asks from her desk. I hope she doesn't look at me too closely, or she'll be able to tell I was crying into my pillow all night. It was amazing. I hope I can go back one day.
Did you end up checking those college admissions?
I walk to my desk and pull out a textbook immediately. I need to bury my face somewhere. I got into Drexel.
That's amazing, Ms. Santiago.
Ms. Fuentes claps her hands together. She drops them when I stare unenthusiastically at my closed applied math book.
You don't seem excited. What's wrong?
I shake my head.
I'm fine. Still jet-lagged, I guess.
I don't look at Malachi when he walks in, but I can feel his eyes on me the entire 30 minutes of class. We spoke on the phone last night after my conversation with Buela. Well, mostly I spoke, which is a change for us. He listened as I listed my fears and as I cried about Buela. I'm so happy for her, and I'm so afraid of change. At lunch, I can't even pretend to play with my food.
Imani, please explain to me why you're in crisis mode again today. You just got back from a beautiful country, you have a boyfriend, a college acceptance, and the best friend a person could have. So what is the problem?
Angelica never has much patience with me when I'm moping.
I feel like I'm being pulled in 100 directions, and my feet are stuck in cement.
She pushes her glasses up higher on the bridge of her nose.
So you went to Spain and became a poet?
I pull my hand from underneath hers and flick applesauce at her blonde curls.
Hey!
She ducks out of the way before any lands on her and pretends to hide under the table.
Girl, get up.
I'm done reminding you who's boss here.
Yeah, okay. Wait until I get this weave out. It's going to be straight up applesauce war.
And absolutely nothing has changed. But for a few moments, my chest feels lighter.
Love.
Since I miss her so much, I pick up baby girl from daycare, even though it's an extra half hour each way when I go there after school. Mama Clara is super sweet and can't stop showing me baby girl's artwork and finger paintings and all the little dresses she uses on her dolls. I haul baby girl onto the bus and let her sing to me.
She's such an adorable child,
an older white woman says from across the aisle.
Your sister?
I smile at baby girl. No, ma'am. My daughter. The smile fades from her face, but mine stays right where it is. I've met this kind of woman before. The kind with real strict ideas about what makes certain people respectable. The kind that gets sour-faced at learning baby girl is my daughter, but who would have sympathy if I was of a paler complexion. The kind that looks at Angelica's colorful hair and calls her ghetto under her breath, but thinks a white tween with purple cornrows is charming and creative. She looks like the kind of woman who will break a stereotype down the middle and hold one half up for white kids and one up for black ones. And maybe I'm stereotyping her too, pretending to know what kind of woman she is because of the kind of women who have hated on me and Angelica and all the black and brown girls we know from home, who have shaken their heads and tisked their teeth and reminded us we weren't welcome in their part of the city, on their side of the bus, in their world. The smile stays on my face. I nuzzle baby girl. Just the two of us. We can make it if we try.
Part 3. The Bittersweet.
Imani's, when the world tries to break you, break beer bread with those you love recipe. Serves, your strength when you feel alone. Ingredients: 3 double scoops of flour, 4 thumbs of white sugar, 1/2 a stick of melted butter, 2 bottles of beer, a sprinkle of sage, a sprinkle of island oregano.
Directions. 1. Preheat the oven to 400 degrees. Mix all the ingredients except herbs until it's a smooth mixture. Mix sage and island oregano into the batter.
2. Spread the mixture into a greased bread pan. Spread some more butter over the top.
3.
Bake the bread for the entirety of Bad Bunny's last album.
4.
Take the bread out of the oven and let cool. Best eaten with honey butter while listening to your own gut.
Stuck.
Over the next couple of weeks, everyone keeps asking me about where I'm going to school. I usually just smile and shrug. Only Buela looks ready to wring my neck because she wants to write the check for the deposit. But the truth is, I know what I want to do. I just don't know how to tell anyone, not even the people closest to me. Angelica has tried to get me to tell her about my future plans, doing everything from threatening me to mothering me to get me to talk, and today at lunch is no different. Imani, you should try to eat something. I don't look at her. She got into every school she applied to, except for Pratt. They waitlisted her, and she anxiously checks her email every time the security guards have their backs turned. I'm fine. I'm not really hungry. A shadow falls over me, and I look up at smooth brown skin, bright brown eyes. Malachi. This isn't his lunch period. What are you doing here? I ask him. He straddles a cafeteria table bench and leans toward me until our foreheads touch. He doesn't smile. You've been ducking me, and you won't talk to anyone, and you seem sad. I figured maybe I could get an answer from you here. I nod at him, and then look down at my lunch tray. I begin to push back from the table, but then arms are around me. Malachi hugs me from behind, and Angelica stands up and hugs me from the front, and I take long, deep breaths with the both of them holding me close. Malachi tells me it's going to be okay. Angelica probably would say the same if she had a sensitive soul in her body, but she doesn't. So instead she says, "Girl, it's time to step into your own light and stop being afraid." Both statements are helpful. The last day before the deposit has to be postmarked, Buela leaves a blank check by my bedside with a note. "Follow your dreams, Nena. The rest will figure itself out." And so I complete the forms, and I mail my decision.
Accepted.
"I got in," Angelica screams into the phone. "I'm coming over right now. I want you to read the email to me. I need a witness to make sure this is real."
And I know she doesn't say Pratt Institute, but there's no other school she'd be this excited about, and they were the only school to waitlist her. She must have gotten off the list. My girl is going to be heading out to New York.
I shake myself when I realize the silence has gone on a moment too long. "Angelica, I'm so excited for you. Come over. I can't wait to read the email."
I put the phone down. Buela is napping on the couch after a big breakfast. I close the novel I was reading for English. I don't know why I'm even doing homework anymore. The end of the year is in 4 weeks, and teachers don't even care about schoolwork these days. It's not like they're going to fail us. A couple of them have been really sick lately. I've seen more subs this month than in the whole year. There are 3 hard knocks on the front door, and I open it without looking through the peephole.
"Angelica, Buela is sleeping, so..."
But it's not Angelica. It's Tyrone. Good cologne-wearing ass Tyrone, with a puppy dog look on his face.
"Can we speak? I was hoping we could talk about something."
I step onto the stoop and pull the door closed behind me. "Tyrone, you're here." I check my phone. 2 hours early. I don't have baby girl ready yet. Unfortunately, it's his weekend.
"I wanted to talk about that," Tyrone says. "I have an update."
"Yeah, I got an update of my own. I got into college, and I'm dating someone."
His lips tighten,
and he shakes his head. Dating someone? I had heard something, but I hoped it wasn't true. I don't like that.
I take a deep breath. I know, Tyrone. I know.
And for a long time, I wanted to do what everyone liked. I just need you to be there for your daughter. I'll respect you, and I won't introduce her to someone unless I'm sure of who they are and that they'll be a good influence. But I'm not going to hide myself from the world. I'm not going to stop living. I'm not going to resent my kid. That's not how you care for a person.
He hasn't stopped shaking his head.
I knew you shouldn't have gone to Spain. You came back with all these crazy ideas. My mother always said you were easily influenced.
I smile, because when his mother wanted to pay for my abortion, easily influenced was not what she'd called me. Tyrone shoves his hands in his pockets and clears the frown off his face. I take him in. He looks more mature. His collared shirt is ironed. His hair is nicely trimmed. There's an air of confidence around him that seems less reliant on how quick he can turn a phrase, and like he's actually comfortable in his own skin. I don't know when that happened, but I must have missed the transformation.
Listen, actually, that's not why I'm here. That's your business. You've taken care of Emma well so far, and although I don't like it, I'm just not going to think about other dudes around my baby moms and my kid. But I am here about Emma. I want you to know that I got a job recently, and my own apartment, so I want to help you out more with money. My mother tells me all the time babies are expensive, and I know I could be doing better by you and Emma, even if I can't offer a lot just yet.
My heart stops for a second. Army tank Mrs. Palmer was advocating for giving me some money for baby girl. Everything in this life really does change. But Tyrone isn't finished, and he holds up a hand as if what he wants to say next isn't something I'm going to want to hear.
Imani, I want to extend my visitations, Friday night to Monday morning. I think I deserve the whole weekend. Emma is always well taken care of. I pick her up and drop her off on time, and you always know how to reach me. And I'd like a full week in the summer to take her on vacation with my family.
I keep my face stone cold. I keep all my feelings tucked tight like a gymnast holds herself when she's tumbling through the air. But that's exactly how I feel, like I'm free falling.
Let me think about that, Tyrone. That's a big change.
Of course. I know it's a lot to drop on you. I miss her when she's not with me. Every time I see her, she's grown bigger and is doing something new, and I don't want to miss any more moments.
I nod. If you wait a few minutes, I'll have baby girl ready for you. No sense in your driving back home only to turn right back around.
And I try to tell myself the same thing. Forward is the only direction to go in. Turning back around is for the birds.
Prom. Although Malachi and I talk every day and see each other in school, we've been more chill since Spain. We've fallen into an easy rhythm of friends who kiss and talk all the time, but there's no pressure for much else. We haven't talked about us and what long distance will mean, and I'm fine with that.
You just hanging around the house? Buela says as she puts in an earring.
I lean around her to watch the TV. Reruns of Barefoot Contessa are on.
I nod. Yeah, just me and baby girl.
Is Angelica coming over?
She puts on her coat and grabs her purse.
No, she's planning her prom outfit with Laura.
Buela has the lipstick halfway to her lips when she stops.
And when are you planning your outfit?
I nod at the screen.
The Contessa just always knows what to add to make a table look classy. I need to email Aunt Sarah some of these tips.
Imani, you didn't hear me ask you a question. Why haven't you mentioned prom?
She sits next to me on the couch. Nena, do you not want to go?
No, abuela, I don't. We already spent all that money for the Spain trip and my school deposit. Aren't we stretching every dollar as it is? My tips from serving lunch at school only go so far. I can't ask you to give an extra $200 a month later.
Apaga la televisión.
And I can tell she's about to mama bear me, which is what she does when she wants to be strict without nagging me.
Come on, abuela. You're going to be late for your date with Joe. Can't we talk about this later?
Apagala. I roll my eyes and turn off the TV.
You don't want to go to prom?
Malachi didn't ask you?
He did. He's been asking me, but he understands that it's just not something we have the money for, and that I don't want to go.
You're a woman soon, but for the next month and a half, enjoy high school. Go to prom.
The only thing I want to do on prom night is hang out here, watch J-Lo movies, and make delicious snacks. What do you think?
She leans her forehead against mine.
Well, Nena,
I think we could live with that.
And a week later, that's exactly what I do. Malachi goes to prom, but leaves early and joins us at the house. He brings me a bright red rose and tucks my hand into his suit pocket as we slow dance to a corny Jennifer Lopez song. Baby girl and Buela clap when we are done, and it's exactly the memory I wanted.
The Rising. I can't sleep the night before graduation. It's almost midnight. As of tomorrow afternoon, I'll be a high school graduate. And since it was my 18th birthday a week ago, I'm officially an adult. Unfortunately, all I want to do is snuggle in Buela's lap and ask her to fix my life for me, to make the decisions, to make it all easy. Everyone's words swirl in my ear. Buela, Julio, Angelica, Miss Fuentes, Aunt Sarah, Chef Amadi, Chef Aiden, Tyrone, Malachi. Baby girl sighs in her sleep, and I get up to touch her cheek. She's so peaceful, and I know I'm not going to be able to sleep tonight. I tiptoe past Buela's bedroom and walk downstairs into the kitchen, set the oven to 350 degrees, grab flour, butter, salt, dried oregano, a beer I plan to use to braise a steak. Julio once told me my mom loved to bake. Aunt Sarah has confirmed it's true, although none of the recipes she's ever sent me mention them being my mother's. I mix all the ingredients together. I'm going to have to tell Buela what I decided to do about college, and I'll need to make some plans for the fall. Tyrone still wants to discuss a new custody schedule, and I think I'm going to let him have more days with baby girl. The ServSafe test results come back in a week, and I'm sure your girl did well. I've never studied harder for an exam. The bread still has 20 minutes to go, and I'm nodding off when I hear a knock on the door. At this point, it's past midnight. I grab one of the knives from the butcher block and walk quietly toward the peephole. Standing on the front stoop is Julio. A whole month earlier than usual. I crack the door open, and I think I must still be dreaming. But he sweeps me up in a hug, and there's his old familiar scent. Old Spice, lock lotion, and something I've always called his island scent. What are you doing here? We didn't expect you for a month, I whisper.
What? You didn't think I would miss my only girl's graduation?
I almost nod. I did, in fact, expect just that. Is everyone sleeping?
He tugs his suitcase into the living room, and I close the door behind him. His bag is bigger than usual. I walk into the kitchen, and he follows me, stopping at the doorway. Couldn't sleep, huh? He says, rocking on his heels. I check the oven. Still a bit more time while the top of the bread browns. Julio and I are both standing. You want to sit and join me? I can cut you a slice of bread in a bit. but he's shaking his head before I even finish my sentence.
No, no, I couldn't. Did mommy cook today?
What? Don't tell me you're gluten-free, I joke. Abuela didn't cook today. You're stuck with my food, and I don't know if you heard, but I'm a pretty good cook.
There's a long pause.
Imani, don't you ever wonder why whenever I visit, I don't eat your cooking?
Of course I wondered. I was just too in my feelings to ever say anything.
Your grandmother says your food reminds her of Puerto Rico. But for me, your food doesn't make me think of back home. It makes me think of the home I had here. Every single one of your dishes makes me think of your mother. It kills me to see memories of her face every time I take a bite of something you made. It kills me to be here in Philadelphia, and every street corner reminds me of her. I always think with time it will get easier, but it hasn't. I'm stuck. Julio and I have never talked about my mother, and although my appetite for the bread is crushed beneath his words, my hunger to say the thing I've never said blossoms. I walk to the sink and wash my hands. I look at my father. I should be so angry at you. You abandoned me over and over. Why haven't I ever been enough to make you stay? He stuffs his hands in his pockets again. His long locks swing as he shakes his head. It was never you, Imani. I tried. Every year I came, I said this would be the year I stayed and helped to raise my daughter. But you didn't need me. Mom's did such a good job while I was gone, and I wasn't built for a place like this. I miss the ocean. I miss the warmth. I miss having a real purpose. There are so many tough reminders for me here. But wouldn't there have been good memories too? If you stayed long enough to make some? He nods. Quizás, Imani. Quizás. I want to keep on trying, even though you are too grown to need me. I know you got a lot of changes coming, and I was thinking maybe I could stay for a while this time and help you with Emma and the bills. That could work, right? While you get used to what's coming next. And maybe the trying has to be enough. I take the bread out the oven and slice a piece for myself. I sit down at the table and take a bite. My father watches me closely for a moment before he reaches over and breaks off a corner. He closes his eyes. For a moment, I think he'll set the bread back down. But after a long pause, he pops the bread between his lips and begins chewing. I reach across the table and cover his hand. Promotion ceremony. I have to use a whole pack of bobby pins to keep my cap sitting on my curls. We are standing outside of an auditorium at Temple University, where the Schomburg graduation was held. Buela and Julio are snapping pictures on their phones as I hold baby girl. She keeps running her fingers through the tassels on my cap. In my other hand, I hold up my diploma. Mr. Jagoda stands in the background smiling, a calm presence, and I'm glad Buela invited him. I hear someone squeal behind me, and then Jelly throws an arm around my shoulders. I lean against her and smile as we pose. But her girls taking pictures without her must be too much for Buela to resist, because she hands her phone to Mr. Jagoda and rushes to my other side. Soon Malachi's tall figure stands next to her, tickling baby girl. When I look up at him, he blows me a kiss. Mr. Jagoda gestures someone into the picture, and Miss Fuentes winks at me, but not quick enough because I notice the tears in her eyes. Someone clears his throat, and I turn my neck to see Chef Aiden standing behind me, an arm each on Malachi and Angelica's shoulders. I have to do a double take when I see him in a sharp suit, his bald head shining in the sun. And just as we all stand straight and look at the cameras as Julio counts down, a high-pitched voice breaks in. Can I get into? Pretty Leslie doesn't wait for me to respond as she presses into Miss Fuentes and smiles a megawatt smile. Before Julio puts down his phone, I clear my throat and ask over the sounds of all my classmates taking photos. Mr. Jagoda, can you take a picture of the group with Julio in it too? Mr. Jagoda takes Julio's phone. I can tell Julio doesn't know how to feel about Mr. Jagoda yet, but he stands next to Chef Aiden behind us. Buela's arm comes around my waist, and it feels like it's less to support me and more to offer comfort to both of us. Mr. Jagoda counts down for the last time. My family smiles for the camera. Everyone in the picture and their families have been invited back to our house for a graduation lunch. I started cooking last night, a feast to end all feasts. I've been putting the meal together for a while now, although I didn't know exactly why I was pairing certain flavors or how certain sides would work with one another. I was cooking toward this graduation dinner because high school isn't the only thing I'm leaving behind. Although my food still doesn't give me any memories, it has always been looking back. It's infused with the people I come from, but it's also a way for me to look forward, to watch the recipes that from my roots transform, grow, and feed the hungriest places inside of me. And like a map I've been following without knowing the exact destination, I know now I've been equipping myself with tools from the journey to help me survive when I arrive. Although I don't have all the answers for what is coming next, I can finally see a glimpse of where I, Imani Santiago, am going. Moving forward. Buela is at home with Julio and baby girl. We had a big family meeting a few days ago, and I finally laid out my plan. Buela won't change her mind about what she thinks I should do. Julio hasn't voiced an opinion outside of asking how he can be of help. Although baby girl knows how to communicate exactly what she wants, she's still not able to offer advice outside of patting my back when I hug her and telling me, "Good job, mommy." And so, I pulled up the card Chef Aiden's friend gave me at the winter dinner, the one from the fancy restaurant Buela and I went to. I've had it on my armoire since December, with no reason to keep it, but something wouldn't let me throw it away. I tug on my shirt before I walk into the restaurant. Buela ironed it for me without asking me what I needed it for. I run my palms down the front of my slacks, and I'm glad that it's warm enough out that I don't need a jacket, because I'm so nervous I'm sweaty, and if I was wearing layers, it'd be a problem. I open the door, and the hostess smiles warmly. "Table for one?" "No, I swallow hard and almost turn around. "I was hoping to speak to the chef." "The chef? Do you mean a manager? Are you looking for a job?" "No, I mean the chef. Is she available? She told me I could drop by." The woman narrows her eyes as if she doesn't believe me, but she turns her perfectly bunned up head to the side and motions to a server. She leans toward him and whispers in his ear. He nods and strides in the direction of the swinging door to the kitchen. The hostess taps a nail on her stand. "If you'll just wait one moment." 5 minutes pass, and I know because I keep glancing at my cell phone. 6 minutes. The hostess is pretending she can't see me anymore. Couples come in and glance at me to see if I'm waiting for a table, but I just keep offering them the same sickly smile and motioning them to go ahead. 7 minutes. 8 minutes. 9 minutes. I'm about to lose my nerve and turn away when the door swings open with a bang and a woman in a high white cap and smock walks toward the hostess stand. She's as tall as I remember. "What?" she barks at the hostess, who immediately points at me. Chef Williams turns and looks at me, raises an eyebrow. I straighten up. "Hello, chef." I stick out my hand. "My name is Imani Santiago. I'm not sure if you remember me. I was Chef Aiden's student at Schaumburg Charter High School. Last winter, you came to an event at my high school, and you gave me your card in case I ever wanted a job." The frown on her forehead clears up.
Yes, of course. Your food had the most amazing quality to it. She remembers. I came here today because I want a job. I know food better than anyone, and I was wondering if I could work for you. She takes her hand from mine and crosses her arms, and she seems to be fighting a smile. This is a pretty demanding job, regardless of what position you start in. I don't usually hire someone so young for the kitchen staff. I understand. And although I'll be attending Drexel's culinary arts program on a part-time basis, it's not too far from here, so I can go to classes in the morning and be here by the lunchtime rush. My family is helping me out to make sure I can commit to the long hours. I give her a soft shrug. I want to stay in Philly, and work in Philly, and learn from a restaurant in Philly, because I think I have a lot to offer my hometown and the places I'm from. She looks me slowly up and down. How soon can you start? I let go of her hand and tug on the book bag I have around my shoulders, the one that holds my chef's jacket and clogs. Today. Today seems like a great day to begin. From esantiago724@drexel.mail.edu to sarahfolks_15@exchange.com. Date, Thursday, August 1st, 3:02 p.m. Subject, revisit. Hi, Aunt Sarah. Thanks for my mom's pound cake recipe. I made it for my father last week, and although he cried the entire time eating it, he finished every crumb. I don't know how long his visit will last, but he doesn't seem to be itching to go back just yet. He didn't renew the lease on his apartment, and he's had all his barbershop tools shipped here. A cousin of his is running the barbershop in Puerto Rico. I know Philadelphia will never be able to keep him here for long, but I think he's at least planning to stay a bit longer than usual, and if the pound cake helps, I'll keep on making it. As to your question, Tyrone will be taking Emma on a family trip in 2 weeks, and I think that would be a perfect time for me to visit. I would love to come meet my cousins and my other aunts and uncles. As to your last assignment, I did make up a recipe inspired by my name. Although Julio has told me before it means faith, I don't think I understood why my mother might have wanted to name me that until this year. And so I decided to make a remix of Flambe Shrimp a la Imani, because what better way to take a leap of faith than to set something on fire and trust it will not only come out right, but that it will be completely delicious. I can't wait to see you in a few weeks. With love and a sprinkling of cinnamon, always, E. This is Elizabeth Acevedo. This production of With the Fire on High, presented by HarperTeen and Harper Audio, was recorded at Clean Cuts in Washington, D.C. Engineered by Isabella Ness. The executive producer and director was Caitlin Garing. It was produced by John Marshall Media. Text copyright 2019 by Elizabeth Acevedo. Production copyright 2019 by HarperCollins Publishers. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.